Hello, and welcome to Checking the Gate, a film and religion podcast. My name is Michael M. Patty.
And I am Robert Wright-Stasko.
Today, we will be discussing the 2010 Emma Stone film, Easy A, and in TV Corner, Firefly, because apparently not too many shows have preachers for main characters.
We've talked about one in the past, V, and now we got another one with the character of Shepherd Book, who is in not only Firefly, but the movie Serenity as well. So let's talk about Easy A.
Easy A is loosely based on Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter. It was actually sort of inspired by it. A high school girl decides to spice up a conversation with her friend by lying about losing her virginity. And the next thing you know, it spirals out of control and everyone believes she is having sex with everyone else. At one point, it turns serious, and someone who's not in on the gag actually tries to proposition her with unanticipated results. And the Christian group at her high school even pickets her supposed alleged actions. There are also a whole bunch of other subplots that I'm not sure we're going to get into. All-star cast in the film. We're going to focus a little bit on the religious element and the portrayal of some of those characters, including the main leader of the Christian group, played by Amanda Bynes.
Her character name is Mary Ann, and she overhears that first conversation that Olive has with her best friend, saying how she spent her summer. As the movie goes on, her friend Brandon, who's homosexual, gets Olive to agree to pretend to sleep with him or just start a rumor that they've done it.
No, so I think pretend is the right word. There's actually a major centerpiece in this movie where they're at a party and banging on the walls and moaning for all their worth.
Jumping on the bed.
Yes.
And just so they would stop the persecution of this poor boy because he's getting picked on because he's gay. So after that, Olive agrees to provide this service, air quotes, for other guys. Just start a rumor that she slept with them, you know, for gift cards and stuff. And as Mike said, it starts going all wrong. But then she clears up the confusion by posting a very long, about an hour and a half.
That ends up being the entire movie.
Yeah, a webcast, and clears it up, and it has an 80s movie ending, like, quite literally, stealing from three different 80s movies, and finds love in the end, and it's all good, as they say at the end. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Amanda Bynes' character, Mary Ann. She's really the focus of the sort of Christian controversy, and it sort of brings up most of the stuff from The Scarlet Letter. So, Mike, I want to ask you, do you think that she represents a good portion of Christians?
I'm not sure I would characterize her as a accurate representation of most Christians. I think this is a comedy film. And I think certainly they have played up the stereotype of a Christian fundamentalist teen. Do I also think there are Christians who feel that way, that other people's reputations are certainly their business? Well, yes, absolutely. And I'll be the first to admit that her character in this movie is a little two-dimensional, but they're making a point with her. And I'll concede that, but the reason she's used as a stereotype is because there are factions within Christianity who go to extremes like that and make it their business to meddle and to care what other people's business is.
I think in a lot of churches you'll find people who are like that, in my experience. I've also been in churches where in the membership contract you signed when you became an actual baptized member of the church, there was an anti-gossip clause. Obviously, the church has had this sort of problem in the past, so they put the kibosh on it right from the start and be like, no, we're not going to do that. So obviously, it's not something that I think people try and do, but there's some people who feel the need to guard the faith and to keep out a certain element, which is always bad in
exactly.
any kind of religion.
It's acting like that. And again, the movie is making a point of a stereotype. Acting like that is unchristian. And the movie knows that if that character does not.
Right. And just about every Christian, including myself, has gone through that phase where you look at what's wrong in your life and the sin in your life. And as a new Christian, you're trying to get rid of that. And the wrong way to do it is by yourself. The right way to do it is with the help of Jesus. But when you try and do it yourself, you end up externalizing it and trying to cut out people and things in your life and looking at other people and projecting your problems onto them and saying, you need to change, when really you should be looking in the mirror and say, you know what, maybe I should change.
May I quote some REM right now?
Sure.
For the listeners, this is being recorded on September 24th, 2011, and REM broke up earlier this week. They have a song called New Test Leper about a person with an unspecified nonconformity who goes on a talk show. And the first line of the song is, I can't say that I love Jesus. That would be a hollow claim. But he did make some observations, and I'm quoting them today. Judge not, lest ye be judged. What a beautiful refrain.
Yes, we are all very sad that REM has broken up, and we won't be losing any more religion. It's very sad. Yeah, that's the thing is, when you get that sort of fervor for your faith, and you feel that you have to protect it, not just your faith, but the faith in general, you can go a little overboard, and you'll start picking out certain scriptures, and you'll forget about stuff like judge not, lest you be judged. And you'll look at, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out, and you can say, well, that person is like that eye, I'm just going to cut them out of my life, you know, and that's not what Christianity is about. So, Michael, as a film, how does this hold up? I mean, I found it to be funny, I found it to be entertaining, and sometimes the message does come home a little hard, but that's what the original Scarlet Letter did as well.
I'm not sure they were trying to make it a hard-hitting message movie. I think the original intent was just to make a John Hughesian... Yes, I just used the word Hughesian. make a John Hughes-style teen movie for the 21st century. I think the casting of Emma Stone was perfect. She just glows in this movie. It's funny, and it does make you think about what other people think, and I think it's a good message for high school kids that they can go and they can do their own thing, and they shouldn't worry about what other people think as long as they're being true to themselves, which Olive wasn't, and that's what got her into trouble. I can understand why religious people would think they were being ridiculed or mocked. I think it's, again, I said this in a couple of our other podcasts, I don't think the filmmakers' intentions were as deliberate as maybe we give them credit for after the fact. Because we've discussed, the Marianne character is a little shallow, and I think we're just supposed to see her as a foil. They try to make her three-dimensional. There's a subplot about her boyfriend. They find out that he's cheating on her because he gives one of the teachers chlamydia, and then she's all upset about that, and we see her crying. Yes, she is a stock character. I'm not gonna... She's maybe the down point of the movie.
Amanda Bynes, she's not bad, but she's not like a Jodie Foster in Bloom. You know, she's not the greatest actress, but I think she performs to her abilities here. I've had the opportunity to see her other show before it was canceled, and she mugs for the camera. She does all the pratfalls. She's very much a slapstick comedian, so it's kind of what she does here. Goes a little over the top.
Yeah. I'd like to quote an online review that I read in preparation for this podcast. It's from a conservative family values website where everything that isn't safe for anyone over, I think, the age of 4 or so is bad. and it's pluggedin.com, and it's run by Focus on the Family. I'm going to read the last two paragraphs, the summation of their review on Easy A. Overall, it seemed like the reviewer was entertained, but it wasn't safe for families, so it was bad. EZA's take on and takedown of Christians is as shallow as it is maddeningly predictable. Allah's permissive parents pound the pulpit, no judgment, while the caricatured believers who suggest that sex might need boundaries and result in significant consequences are portrayed as either hysterical or hypocritical or both. Perhaps what saddens the reviewer most about this film is that when Olive goes looking for honest Christian answers about sex, she can't find any. And so she settles for our culture's dangerously self-righteous take on this immensely important subject. It's my business and nobody else's. Well, I think that review's take on the final message is exactly right, except for this person's opinion of it. I think the message is exactly it's her business and no one else's. And I think that's a good thing. Maybe not so in high school, but in life. I think that's a good message to teach at that age, that when they're mature enough to make decisions like this, that's what to look for. You know, to thine own self be true. I don't think that's in the Bible.
No, and neither is God helps those who help themselves, not in the Bible. I'll give you $1 million if you can point out that verse.
That's from Futurama.
Yeah. It's interesting how this particular view was looking for a certain moral, and it wasn't there. And so he was like, oh, that's just Hollywood. They're not going to give us a Christian message. Of course not. If you want a movie with a Christian message, you can watch a Tyler Perry movie. He has a very Christian worldview and makes movies from that viewpoint.
Or a Kirk Cameron movie. All two of them.
Yeah. Well, there's three. Three Left Behind movies. I don't know.
Really? I was thinking there was Left Behind and Fireproof.
No, there's
okay, there's four. There's four then.
Three Left Behind movies. They're not good, and neither are the books they're based upon, because maybe I don't have a premillennial view of eschatology. But
I have no idea what that last sentence meant.
You know what? I'll be honest, neither do I. But it's very easy to get hooked into the eschatology, the end of the world thing. So you have to believe this to be a Christian, or you need to believe that to be a Christian. You have to speak in tongues. You have to not have premarital sex, you know. And the thing is, when Jesus came, he talked to everybody. He talked to the woman at the well who had five husbands and then was living with another man. And he talked to her and was like, I'm giving you the message. You know, I'm giving you the path to eternal life. Drink the water that I give you and you won't be thirsty. And, you know, Jesus doesn't say you need to fix yourself before you become a Christian. And I think too many of us fall into that trap where we have to put on this sort of facade, like there's nothing wrong in my life. You know, maybe keeping all our secrets to ourselves might be a bad thing. I think maybe opening up and discussing our problems and having an open dialogue and saying, you know what, maybe there are too many teenagers who are having babies before they're ready. Maybe we should talk to them about this. Maybe we need to talk about
all the good things and the bad things that may be.
Yes.
I completely agree. Rereading this again right now, it's on the screen in front of me. That's exactly what you're saying. Rather than focusing on the good things that are in this movie about empowering young people to be open and to be honest and discuss these things and not be confrontational like the fundamentalists. Rather than saying this isn't what Christians are like, let's show them that we are not judgmental. It ends up being a judgmental review.
Yeah.
She's talking about sex the whole movie and uses a couple dirty words, so it's not good. Well, no, that's not...
Well, this is the world we live in. There's an element of Christianity that wants to withdraw. I mean, you've always had this ever since the monastic movement started, you know, when people wanted to run away to a monastery, become a monk, and withdraw from the world. And we try and do that, but still live in the world at the same time. And there's a contradiction there. You're trying to block out all the bad things in life. You react to them badly. You don't discuss these things with your kids. You don't say, well, maybe you should think clearly about this, or here's another way to deal with this, instead of saying, just don't do that. We need to talk about how people are becoming more sexually active at a younger age. And I think part of it, like right at the beginning of the movie, it was, you know, Olive lied about having sex just so her friend would leave her alone, and then it, you know, made her more popular. And it's like a something that you have to do in society today. And really, there's another way of thinking and talking about it, and we don't discuss it. We just say, well, you shouldn't do that. But you don't give any guidelines. You don't give any method of dealing with things.
Why shouldn't I do that? What can I do?
Yeah. The movie, I think, points out a problem in our society, but it doesn't quite give the best answer.
I think it's a good starting off point. I think there's a lot of room for discussion.
Right.
Afterwards.
Right. It's not supposed to give an answer, really. So I think it points out there are elements who don't want to talk about it, and those are the people we need to watch out for.
Yes. Now let's move on to our TV corner of the week, Firefly.
All right. On today's TV corner, we are talking about Firefly.
And one of the main characters of Firefly was Shepard Book, played by Barney Miller veteran Ron Glass. He was a shepherd in the future that Firefly takes place in, is another word for a preacher or a holy man, like a shepherd of men. And they never came out and disclosed what kind of denomination, other than some manner of Christian in the future, that he was supposed to be. It was also heavily implicated that he either was not actually a shepherd or was at some point in his past not a shepherd, but in fact had worked for the Evil Alliance.
And it even kind of hinted that he was an operative, an assassin, and consciously chose to leave that life behind. And it's very interesting, his character, because the things he says and the way he portrays the character, he's very much like Frontier Methodist. Very early on in American history, the Methodist preachers would ride around on horses from one church to another, and they'd do a circuit. Like, they'd preach in one church one week, and then they'd spend a week journeying a few hundred miles to another church and preach, and it would go around. That's sort of the feel you get from Book, you know, being on the ship.
That would have been an interesting take if it had ever gotten to a season two, if maybe he was on the ship to find passage to places to go and preach, but he's there for his own journey. It's never made clear, and they end up, spoiler alert, they kill the character in the feature film Serenity, which you should be watching now instead of listening to this. And side note, I had always thought that a good idea for the sequel, which would allow them to have him and Alan Tudyk characters of Wash, who was also killed back in the sequel, would be to have the crew of the Firefly get a job and it having some connection. And through flashbacks, it would show the Shepherd's real story. And but apparently they had that in a comic already, which I just discovered this morning doing a little bit of research for this.
I found that out yesterday. The Shepherd's Tale. Dark Horse put out.
Yeah, I knew they had Firefly and Serenity comics. I have one, but I didn't know about this.
You said you didn't know what brand of Christian he was.
I think it's deliberately muddy.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the universe that Joss Whedon was creating, where you have American Westerns-type cowboys out in the frontier of space, and they like curse in Chinese. And the rationale he gives for that is, you know, America and China are these two great superpowers, and in the future they sort of merge. And so you have a lot of in costume and sets. You see a little blending of this. Looking at the character of Shepherd Book, he talks about going to an abbey that's very a Catholic sort of thing. But like I said, he has a very sort of Methodist feel about the rest of his character. There's also an element of Shepherd Book's spirituality and his religious practices that's very interesting. Again, on that episode where he was spending time with River, he was waking up or washing his hair or something, and River knocks on his door and walks into his room, and his hair's sticking out, and she freaks out and runs away. The fact that he had this really long hair, and he explains to her, you know, I'm sorry, that's just part of my order. It's very similar to what's described in Numbers chapter 6, the Nazirite vow that the ancient Jews used to take. They wouldn't eat certain foods, they wouldn't drink like any alcohol, and they wouldn't cut any hair on their bodies. Another religion that does that is the Sikh religion. They don't ever cut their hair. That's why they wear the turbans and stuff and always carry a comb with them. But at the roots of Christianity is Judaism, and there was this Nazarite vow. And the way John the Baptist is described in the Gospels as well, it's surmised that he was also a Nazarite. So it's very interesting that the Shepherd Book had all these sort of elements of different religions involved in his spirituality as well. So to me, it seems like maybe, you know, we have a very fractured Christianity today, and maybe in the future they had just sort of came together once again, and like all the things that the great variety of styles of worship and theology they have were sort of united again under one banner, going out into space.
And like unification was what the brown coats were fighting against. So how ironic.
Yeah.
I hate to keep bringing the movie up in TV corner, but I really do like the movie. It's the best series finale ever, and it just happened to be theatrically released. The Shepherd Book has my favorite line in Serenity. He's talking to Mal on Haven, and he mentions belief. Mal rebukes him, and he says to Mal, "Why do you think every time I talk about belief, you think I'm talking about religion?" Or something to that
effect.
Talking
about God.
Yeah. I think that sums up that character and the whole philosophy of the show just perfectly. That just, again, believe in something. Yeah. Yourself or a higher power. Don't just give up hope and mope about. And don't be like the Alliance and get smug.
Don't do the easy thing.
Don't stop believing.
don't start singing either. As a great foil to the Marianne character in the other movie, who really didn't care about people, only cared about proselytizing people and, as they say in the movie, forcing their religion on other people.
She wanted to justify that she was right.
Right. Shepherd Book, he cares more about the people who are in his life.
Yes.
Like anyone who came onto that ship Serenity, even the people who were not so good, who were meaning harm to other people, he's like, you know what, I'm going to protect this person.
Even the glorified prostitute.
Yeah, he was there looking out for them. And that's what a Christian needs to be. I mean, look at Jesus. He hung out with the prostitutes and stuff, and he endured the same sort of ridicule that the Marianne character was putting on the Olive character. So Shepherd Book, I think, as a role model for Christians and for pastors, if I could be a pastor like Shepherd Book, I would. I don't think I'd be an assassin first, but
yeah. And just it's never too late to repent and to go the righteous path.
There's a lot of depth to the character, and that's what made him so interesting, was this big question mark. Like, before he stepped foot on the ship, who was he? Where'd he come from? Yeah. What baggage is he bringing? And you could see him work through those sort of things. Like, there was one episode of Firefly where he's on the ship with River. And the show, River's got a lot of stuff to deal with because the Alliance was messing with her brain. So I like the part where she's like, this isn't right. She's looking through Shepherd Book's Bible, and she's ripping out pages. And he's like, no, you don't.
It doesn't make sense. And he says, it's not supposed to make sense.
You don't change the Bible. The Bible changes you. And that was, thank you, Joss Whedon. I think I might use that.
I'd like to point out for all the listeners who don't know, Joss Whedon is actually either an agnostic or an atheist. He is a non-believer. And I remember reading at some point that he created this character just as kind of a counterpoint to see how the other half lived. I forget his exact quote, but something like that. Just to get this point of view on the ship. And I think he did a bang-up job with it.
Yeah. We need points of view sometimes. As a Christian, I get wrapped up in my own little world, my own little faith. And looking at Joss Whedon's perception of what a shepherd, a minister should be, it's something that I think as a Christian I need to keep in mind. It's sort of like when Monty Python was doing The Life of Brian. John Cleese has this great quote where he said, "We couldn't agree on what religion was, but we all knew exactly what religion wasn't." And that's what our movie's about. And maybe that might be a movie that we could review later on.
Possibly.
If it is, it's got some wacky Monty Python moments in it. But
is there any religious content in that movie? I don't remember. I only saw it once.
The Life of Brian?
Yeah. What was that about again?
It's about a guy who they think is Jesus.
Stop doing that.
I never tell when you're joking.
No one can. It's the tremendous tragedy of my life. No one ever knows when I'm joking.
You got this great poker face. I wish you and our listening audience could see his poker face. It's great. That's why I never play him. Let's sum up and review. Easy A.
Gets an A.
I give it a B+. It wasn't the greatest movie ever, but it was enjoyable.
It's fun. You can look at it and just laugh at the funny stuff and, oh, look at how this whole thing is spiraling out of control. And it's got some, I don't want to say raunchy, it's got some naughty stuff. It's got pretty girls. And you can enjoy it superficially. You can look at it critically and, you know, have a discussion with your teenager about it. It's got a great cast. It's a good movie. It's not really an A. I agree with Robert. It's a B something.
And Firefly.
Again, why are you still listening? Go get the DVDs. Go get the Blu-rays. They're all on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I'm afraid to get it anything less than an A+ because I don't want any brown coat fans knocking on my door. What's wrong with Firefly?
I'll give it an A. Maybe not an A+. A for the series, A+ for the movie.
There you go. Yeah, I remember watching this show on Fox when it was on. So F to Fox for showing the shows out of order on a different time slot every week and then canceling the show for no reason. And that's all I have to say about that. Well, I think that wraps up this episode of Checking the Gate, a Film and Religion podcast. So we'll have links to all the reviews and some other further reading you can do on the show notes. So look at that at our website at ctgpodcast.com. Remember, you could always send your comments or complaints to ctgpodcast@yahoo.com. You can find us on Twitter at ctgpodcast and also on Facebook at Checking the Gate Podcast. Next time, we'll be looking at the movie Book of Eli. We're going back to 100% science fiction. And in our TV corner,
Quantum Leap, the classic science fiction TV show starring Scott Bakula and Dean Stockwell.
Yeah, so we look forward to that, and we hope you will too. So until next time, this is Robert saying keep the faith.
And this is Mike saying peace out.